Thank you. So yeah, as Selena mentioned, this is my work I did for these last 2 years at LimaGrow, not with Neil Matson at Cornell. So today I'm presenting on overall longer photo period with a consistent daily light integral and increase in production we see in lettuce in both soil source and greenhouse environments. So for this talk, I'm going to have just an overall background, physiological background on the project, some of the past literature that's been conducted on this. Go into the growth chamber experiments, and I actually presented some of this last year, but it's still very relevant for putting the greenhouse research in perspective. So I'll go over that, and then we'll actually start with the greenhouse trials, and then where things are headed after this. So as a start, we have brand new technology in greenhouses, LEDs. These are a brand new technology that allows us to be very precise with our application. Not only are they dimmable and adjustable, they're spectrally tunable, so we can apply different narrow wavelength and also broad spectrum LEDs into fixtures, and that really allows us to have a lot of control over plant responses. In addition to that, we really have a lot of flexibility in design. We're able to put these things both as top lights, inner canopy lights, and really anywhere we want on the plants as well, and that gives us an advantage that we have never had before in horticulture in applying light to plants. In addition to this, we're seeing a revolution also with sensor technology and Internet of Things and our ability to both read readings of temperature and humidity from greenhouses and then apply them to the systems that are actually controlling them. So as we're putting Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and all these control systems into greenhouses, we actually have better control over what we're doing. And so as a combination of these things, as an LED company, we're trying to drive really the controllability of LEDs with the understanding and control of the sensors with real-time adjustment and trying to make really precise control of overall lighting environments within greenhouses. So as a research team and research goals, what we're really trying to do with this product is improve profitability and ensure regular harvests for commercial growers. So, of course, supplemental lighting is going to make the plants grow more. A higher yield is obviously going to be good for growers. But in addition to that, some growers have to sell produce several weeks in advance. So it's possible that people are selling tomatoes for October that, you know, haven't even developed on the vine yet. So for growers to be able to really accurately predict yields into the future, it's really valuable for them as well. So we want to be able to ensure consistent lighting environments to kind of take that variable factor out of greenhouse production. And then in addition to that, we're also trying to develop this sensor integration so that we can also improve the efficiency and reliability so we can have good products that are consistently produced week after week in the greenhouse and really be a more comfortable and trusting environment for commercial growers. Okay, so this project obviously has to do with the daily light integral, and the daily light integral is the overall integrated sum of photons over 24 hours. This actually was first used in 1991, so it's a pretty old one. It's as old as me. So, and this really replaced a term that was used in the past called daily total radiation, or DTR. So this is what a lot of the literature will refer to DLI prior to 1991, and it was really in 91 where this precedent was set into horticulture as the reporting term for the overall amount of photons received during a day. DLI correlates really well with plant growth, and we've seen this a lot. This was explored from a variety of different research. We know of the Cornell trials conducted by A.J. Both, looking at lettuce and the overall DLI target of 17 moles per meter squared per day. But this exists for a variety of crops. We know this for petunias as well, and I'm sure some of us have seen the Ball Red Book of DLI guidelines, in which they've listed most relevant species and the overall quality yield impact on growth based on DLI. But DLI only describes the total summed photons over a 24-hour period and doesn't actually give you any information on the photo period that you're growing these crops at. So when we look at how photo period and DLI interactions relate, what we see is it's pretty dynamic and pretty influential how long the photo period actually influences growth of crops. So we see that with roses compared to a 24-hour day and a 12-hour day with the same daily light integral, roses have actually been shown to retain 80% more carbon over the 24-hour photo period. In addition to that, there was a paper out of 1986 where they showed up to 156% increase in dry mass accumulation between 16 hours and 24 hours. This number is a little bit unbelievable, but he did find some of his other varieties were much more consistent with the results that I got, so we'll believe him on that. The increased yields are due to decreases in nighttime respiration and differences in sugar storage and translocation within the plant. So we're actually not seeing big differences in photosynthetic efficiency based on photoperiod. It's more about how these sugars are then stored and transported around the plant. So there was the study done on tomato leaves in particular, where they did two different photoperiods, an 8-hour photoperiod versus a 16-hour photoperiod, and they kept the DLI constant. And what they find here is, to no surprise, the daily photosynthetic rate was a lot higher for the 8-hour photoperiod, or I'm sorry, the instantaneous photosynthetic rate was a lot higher for the 8-hour photoperiod. And that's as expected. It has a higher PPFD of 300 micromoles in comparison to the 150. But when you look at the total amount of carbon fixed during the day, you find almost identical results. They're statistically insignificant. Looking at respiration values, here's where we start to see the big differences. So respiration at night is much higher under the shorter photoperiods. In addition to that, the sugar stays in the leaves. It's not translocated to other parts of the plant. So this is really important to see that, you know, the overall photoperiod is having pretty dramatic effects on some of the secondary metabolism within the plant and how it's moving things around and how it's storing its sugars. So understanding this, we can try to use what we know as the DLI targets, and we know that they're well established, and we know that they're pretty accurate, but we also know photoperiod makes a big difference in plant production. So understanding these two things, what we want to do is really optimize photoperiod and DLI at the same time. And with the LumaGrow lighting technology, we have the ability to dim, adjust, and incorporate sensor feedback. So can we fix our photoperiod and using the amount of ambient sunlight coming into the greenhouse, can we actually adjust our intensity so we always match the duration and match the DLI goal simultaneously? So this was kind of the idea for the project. But we wanted to first understand a little bit more about the actual underpinning behind this phenomenon. A lot of the studies in the past, as I've shown you, just did two different photoperiods. So we were more interested in, is there something going on there? What's the relationship between photoperiod and DLI? So we did a growth chamber study in which we differed photoperiod on a couple different increments. So this data I'm going to be referring to at first is going to be on 3-hour increments from a 12-hour to a 24-hour photoperiod. DLI was set to be around 20 moles per day. And then our PPFDs, as you can see, were highest under the 12-hour photoperiod and go down to lower PPFDs for the 24-hour photoperiod. So DLI is constant, but we should make a note that, you know, the highest intensities are in the shorter photoperiods. So these plants were germinated, put straight into growing conditions after the cotyledons had expanded, and grown for 21 days, then harvested for fresh mass, dry mass, height, and width of plants. I did want to make a little note here on a lot of the seedling work, that after germination, it was very important to put them into the chambers to get very consistent results. These results were very repeatable, but really seems that this germination and initial light conditions will make a difference in the overall growth of the plant. Although, for this, I'm not going to show any data on that. So here are the results we got with equivalent DLI on lettuce dry weights. And it was a pretty consistent linear slope where we saw as much as 80% increase from the 24-hour treatments in comparison to the 12-hour treatments. And so this was right on par with the Kuhn's paper and what we've seen in prior literature, that you get around 80% better production comparing 12-hour to 24-hour photoperiods. So we were able to verify this result, and the fresh weight data actually followed the same trend as well, which was good to see. A little bit more interesting was the overall size, pigmentation, and compactness of these plants. So we saw that the actual deepest pigmentation was in the middle photoperiods. So for this particular trial, we were on 4-hour increments from 12, 16, 20, and 24. And as you can see, the 16-hour photoperiod is actually darkest. And so here's a slightly different picture of the same thing where we actually have them in trays. And the 12-hour treatment is actually the lightest, which is kind of curious because there's been some research done on finishing treatments and ability to color up lettuce and get the real anthocyanin content inside. And what we continually find is that the higher intensities produce deeper coloration. But for this particular project, the highest intensity produced the least a visual amount of anthocyanin, which was kind of an interesting result. So we see that anthocyanin is very affected by photoperiod as well. We can also see that the compactness of the plants was greatest under this kind of the middle treatments as well. We almost got like a shade of void response in the shorter photoperiods. So that went well, and we were ready to take that into the greenhouse to actually see what we can do in a production environment. So we had a double poly greenhouse at Cabrillo College in Aptos, California, using NFT systems to do this trial in. And what was great about this particular location is Cabrillo College is kind of a teaching commercialized greenhouse. So it is a college, but they do sell at the farmer's market every week. They do have kind of production quotas they're trying to hit. And so as a result, it's a great setting to kind of do commercial research in due to the fact that they're not relying solely on their profits in order to keep going along. However, they have a very production-oriented program down there. So it was a great partnership in order to really get good, reliable production data. We used the variety Skyphos, which was germinated and grown for 2 weeks before being transplanted into the system. And then we actually did sequential measurements on it. I'm only going to be talking about the 27 to 29 day harvest in this experiment, and then I'll show you some pictures from later on as well. But we planted out 250 plants per treatment section and then would harvest 10 per week for this trial. The supplemental photo period overlapped the natural photo period, so we had a 12-hour photo period and a 21-hour photo period, and the sunlight was contained within that, so the overall photo period did match the supplemental photo period. We were applying, 162 and 93 micromoles per meter squared per day, which are very relevant commercial values, and increasing the DLI by about 7 moles per meter squared per day. And our target was around 17. So our goal was to actually have the majority of the light be provided by the sun in this trial, and then just supplement over the top of it. We did two replicates and changed treatment locations, so we didn't have any greenhouse effects for this work. So the overall results, as we can see here between the two trials, is we got around a 40% increase in fresh and dry mass for this trial. It was very consistent with the growth chamber results, and the two replicates, despite being moved to different parts of the greenhouse, resulted in very similar results. So we're pretty confident that these photo period effects were also viable in commercial settings as well. Now, they are a little bit less dramatic than we saw in the growth chambers. In the growth chambers, if you remember, we saw as much as 80% increase in biomass, whereas in the greenhouse, we're seeing closer to 40%. And it's likely due to kind of the instantaneous PPFD of light, and we can discuss a little bit more of that in a bit. But overall, we saw pretty consistent results that indeed, longer photo period with the same DLI, which also means the same energy use will produce more biomass. One of the most interesting observations we had on this was when we grew these plants out to maturity. So after, I think, about 45 days, we came in and, sampled these plants as well. And what we saw was a far greater amount of tip burn under the 12-hour photo period, which was kind of interesting because, if you remember, we're matching DLI here, and these 12-hour plants are actually smaller than the treatment plants in the 21-hour photo period. So not only do we have smaller plants, but we have equivalent DLI and big differences in overall tip burn. And so tip burn is generally associated with too high of a DLI or too little airflow. And so we know airflow wasn't a factor here because they're in the same production environment. So there seems to be something more going on with the shorter photo periods and higher intensities that drives more tip burn and, in fact, smaller plants. So as a kind of summary, we did see that, once again, longer photo periods will enhance growth with equivalent DLIs and equivalent energy use in greenhouse, although it's less dramatic than it is in the growth chamber trials. As I mentioned again, the energy use is always maintained because the LEDs are dimmable, and we were actually able to take data on this as well. And then although the pigmentation appeared similar in the greenhouse, we didn't see the same dramatic differences in anthocyanin production, at least visually. We did see big differences in tip burn. So we know that there's probably some interesting mechanisms going on there. So as a next step, we have to look a little bit more into the variable PPFD over photo period within chambers. So since we only got 40% increase in the greenhouses compared to the 80% increase in growth chambers, we want to start looking at what happens when we put a big spike of radiation in the middle of the day and supplement photo period on the outside of that, kind of emulating what you would get in an actual greenhouse where the sun and the solar period can be intensely bright, but for a short duration, and then you want to supplement on the outside of that. We think there may be some answers there in explaining the overall biomass differences. We want to explore seasonal differences in the greenhouse as well. In relation to the first one, we want to see how the natural photo period, natural DLI, affects the overall utility of this strategy and if there are seasons that are more beneficial than others. And then lastly, kind of like the, I don't know, kind of thing sneaking up on me that I don't want to think about is, how does this affect fruit, flowers, and non-leafy green biomass? So the overall translocation of sugars within the plant could be dramatically affected by photoperiod in a way that isn't directly extendable from just the leafy green production. So we know that some plants, you know, prefer shorter photoperiods for increased fruiting or biomass. So we know that's probably going to change the overall optimal photoperiod for production. So it'd be interesting to look at as well. Oh, yep, that's basically it. So just a thank you to Dr. Melanie Yelton, Brian Poole, and the rest of the LumaGrow team for helping me out with my time I spent there. It was a fantastic time. And then as well to Dr. Peter Shaw, Sarah Hulick, Laura Virgilito, and Rachel Golden down at Cabrillo College for the partnership and the fantastic research results. So that's all. Thank you, and I'll take any questions. Eric. Yeah, so the growth chamber experiment, I actually probably did 12 to 15 replicates on about 5 different species, and the results were very consistent.
You saw the greater anthocyanins under 16 hours than the others? That was consistent?
Yes, that was a consistent result.
Any idea? Any explanation?
You know, I don't, and it would be something that I wish I had a little bit better tool set to actually look at anthocyanin concentrations and get some quantitative measurements on it. Because currently I think it's probably a relationship between light intensity and, you know, duration, because you need a high intensity to drive anthocyanin production. So there's probably going to be some relationship in there, but to be honest with you, I'm not quite sure why this occurs.